You're listening to Let's Get Legal, hosted by John Hansen and powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Millie Palmer from Navigant Law Group. Now, here's John Hansen, and let's get legal.
At 1:15 on WGN. Good afternoon. Happy Saturday, everybody. It's April the 5th, and this is Let's Get Legal. We're powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. When we talk estate planning on this show, we usually get in a really solid rhythm of it. A couple people call, a couple people text, and then right when we have to say goodbye to the guests, the phone lines light up even more so. So I thought today, let's give our guest the entire show about estate planning. And this has many tentacles to it. This isn't just wills and trusts, although that's a lot of it. This also has to do with some real-world applications for things that you've heard in the news and things that you wouldn't even expect to have to do with estate planning. Millie Palmer is our guest today. Millie's from Navigant Law. Millie, hello. Happy April 5th. How are you doing?
Well, John, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's great to chat with you. And estate planning's always on my mind, maybe a little bit more so since, as you know, we got the little one, and I need to figure some of those things out.
I know. How's that baby doing?
Good. Great. Wonderful. Put pictures up today in the office. I'm got a photo printer, and I can't stop printing photos, so that's probably a good sign.
Oh, gosh. You know, that's one of my actual estate planning problems is I have way too many photos of my kids. I'm a bit of a shutterbug and, you know, can be found with a camera around my neck. And I don't know what to do with all these albums. And my husband and I were just talking about it today. The house is stacked full of them. What are we going to do with them all?
That's a great little segue into thinking about what the next generation wants or needs. No, we talk about that a lot on this program, whether it's photo albums or just a lot of old stuff. There is a sense that if you can kind of clean up or delineate or delegate some of that stuff or get rid of it, getting your house in order doesn't have to only just be the paperwork of trusts and wills. It can be all the physical things too, right, Millie?
Oh, it really is. And, you know, there's really two things I think about on that. One is, you know, our society doesn't really prize that. But there's a whole cultures that really love, like Swedish death cleaning is a thing where
Whoa.
People really work to hone down, take away the junk, organize, hand things over to the next generation. And, you know, here in the U.S., we don't really talk about that. We don't really talk about the gift that, not just an organized estate plan, and trust me, I'm all about that, but an organized household, what that does for your people.
Yeah. Boy, that's a good point. We didn't even plan to talk about this, but this is such a real thing, right? We have on Your Money Matters, I got my buddy Brian the Cash Man on who talks about, hey, bring some of that old stuff to me. Maybe I can turn some of that into cash and your relatives probably don't want it. We are much more of a minimalist society than we used to. Old furniture, which used to be passed down through the generations, a lot of kids just don't want that now, for better or for worse, right, Millie? And there is some clarity and some cleanliness that can do for your soul if you can find either someone to take it or, I know it seems so foreign to people, but just get rid of some of it.
I think that, you know, just lightening the load a little. When I have a family after a death, usually there's someone who does, one family member that really steps up to the plate and dives into the closets and sorts and organizes. And, you know, there's something to be said for that, though. That person really gets a chance to excavate the life of their loved one. They see those family memories. They touch the things. They deal with their grief differently than the family members who just sort of wait for the check to come, right? Mm. But it's a lot of work, and it can take oceans of time. And the more we can just kind of hone down to what's really meaningful or important to us and kind of tell why that's meaningful, the easier it is on the people that are left behind.
I think that I'm hopefully a long way away from that end, but I
hope So
as I've moved around from when I lived in the city and, you know, was renting and moved from apartment to apartment, now I'm out of the house, so maybe this changes a little bit. But I had bought one or two of those gigantic bins from like a Target or a Walmart or something. And when I would move, I would say, anything that fits in these two giant bins, you can bring somewhere, right? I'll have room in a crawl space or in the basement or wherever it may be. But other than that, that's it. And I think that that kind of helped what may be a brewing, I'm not a hoarder, but maybe some tendencies, a pack rat, maybe that's a better term. I love old newspapers, old things like that. The forcing of prioritizing, I think, did some wonders for me. Even if I break the rule a little bit and get a third bin, at least there is some like control to the matter.
You've got a boundary there, right?
Right.
Okay, that's your stuff that you took place to place. What about your child's stuff? Mm. What do you do with that? I mean, what do you do with, you know, the things that they make for you in school or that they, you know, are part of their life, their mementos and things. And, you know, some of that, you could just document it. You could take a picture of it and put it in a little, you know, online book or something. But I find that I'm a mom of four. And all my kids are out of the house. And I'm one of those moms. I'm trying to foist off boxes of stuff on them.
Can I tell you what my parents did, Millie?
What'd they do?
So they're great. They had saved everything up in the attic in boxes that were pretty well organized, like baby stuff, K through 3, 3 through high school, or whatever the case may be. Well, last year, once they realized all their kids were within a 5-minute drive of each other, they knew our garage codes. And they dumped it all at our place.
Said, oh, my God, it's brilliant.
In a very nice brilliant way, they gave us advance warning that this would be happening. But it was like a UPS delivery. I mean, it was only maybe like 7 or 8 boxes. And it's funny because each of me, myself and my two brothers, we had different ways of going about things. I nearly kept everything, but I looked through each box. I reminisced. It was just almost cathartic to kind of go through it before I put a lot of it in the crawl space because we don't have much in there. My younger brother, who is sentimental, went through everything, but all the things he didn't want, he had a bonfire with them. I don't know if it was cathartic to say he saved the things that were important to him, and he kind of said goodbye to the things that didn't need it anymore. And I'm pretty sure my older brother, who has 3 kids of his own, has no time for anything, so that went just straight into the basement. But there is something about, hey, this isn't your stuff anymore. This was always your kid's stuff and gifts to you. Maybe you keep a folder of it. Just give it to your kids. That's their problem at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But, you know, getting cleaned up and organized financially, document-wise, the stuff-wise, it's all part of that process. And, you know, none of us know when we're going to need to have that done by. You know, some people sadly have a better idea. They've had a bad diagnosis or they've gone through health scares. But none of us actually knows when we need to have it all cleaned and organized by.
Yeah.
If we did, we could do a better job. So, you know,
and that goes
away at it.
Right. And that goes the same for the estate planning itself, right? The wills and the trusts. You talk about,
right,
as a society, we don't talk about cleaning the clutter out. We don't talk about estate planning enough, right? We just do not want to have to deal with it. There's probably I don't know what the latest numbers are, Millie, but it's got to be half the country that doesn't have a solid estate plan together, maybe more.
I mean, you know, sometimes I think I've got a brilliant business model. 100% of the people will die, but only about 10% have good estate plans. So this is an estimate. About 10% have good estate plans that are up to date. I mean, you know, 90% need some work done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I say that kind of joking around, but my husband and I are in that 90%. We recently looked at our old trust and realized I updated in 2022. I had some health issues going on. He couldn't get to the office the day of the signing. His documents are from like 2009. And the choices we made when our kids were little are different than the choices we want to make now. So, you know, I've got myself on my list of clients that need to get their stuff done.
Hopefully you charge yourself a good rate.
I pay for my work in chocolate shakes from Comet. But
no, that's great. I think you're right. I think that people that think that they're okay, and if you have a plan or a will or a trust, and maybe you haven't updated for a while, don't get down on yourself. I mean, you've taken a big step. Just got to take another one to make sure it's up to date.
Well, it's better than nothing. But for example, in my husband's plan, we've got family members doing stuff for us, brothers, sisters-in-law, that kind of thing. But we have four kids who are now grown adults, right? We need to put them to work. And it makes more sense. It makes, you know, they're all good humans. So I think it's not that we don't have anything in place. It's that, you know, keeping it up to date, keeping it, we're better off than nothing. But we want to make sure that we keep it as fresh as possible.
Absolutely. All right, we're just getting started with Millie Palmer. She's from Navigant Law, and she's a great resource for all of you out there. Maybe you have a plan together. You want to find out if it's up to date as it should be. Maybe you're starting from scratch. That's okay, too. We are a judgment-free zone here on this topic at WGN. We are going to welcome anyone to the party, even if you're a little bit late. The phone number for Millie is 847-253-8800. 8800 847-253-8800. This show is called Let's Get Legal. We're powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We'll take you up till 3 p.m. We're on every Saturday, and we cover legal issues from the constitutional scholarships of law all the way to the things that really matter to your everyday lives. And a lot of that has to do with estate planning. That might be the most common. I don't really know Millie Palmer. You can tell me for sure if you've heard stats of this. Millie Palmer from Navigant Law. But that's got to be one of the most common interactions someone has with a lawyer. It's the estate planning lawyer, Millie.
Nope. I think so. I think that real estate attorneys, right?
Yeah, true.
Buying and selling a house or something along those lines.
Family law, pretty, yeah.
Yeah. Divorce is, you know, 50% of marriages or something like that end in divorce. So then you'll have your family law or divorce attorneys and then estate planning attorneys. The thing that we have in common is we deal with people in their everyday life, right? So it's not a stretch to think, oh, I might need a power of attorney, or a stretch to think, hey, somebody in my family's going to go through a divorce, or someone's going to buy a house or sell a house. So the three of us, I think, have the most sort of everyday interactions with people.
Yep. And you guys help shepherd some important documents through. I think these are things that sometimes people think that they can do themselves, and maybe you can cover some bases by doing it yourself, sure. And there are different vehicles in which you can kind of get part of the way there. But an estate planning lawyer kind of plans for things that maybe no one thinks about or all the way through, or avoids probate by coming up with a trust. There's just a lot of things that as an estate planning lawyer, Millie, you're able to do and tackle that I am not.
Well, you know, there's things out there, and the public is more educated now on the subject than they were, I don't know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I was first practicing. But as an attorney that does this work every day, day in, day out, you know, 8-10 hours a day, I'm still learning something new every week. So, you know, I think that I like to think I have some experience and knowledge that the average Joe doesn't. But you know, you can still, I think, do some things or look at or at least get educated on things. There's good information out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's some bad information, too, but there's a lot of information out there.
We're getting a lot of texts from people about what we were chatting about, just the physical stuff of it all. And there's really good ones. And I think that it's such a, every family has this sort of discussion of the transfer of stuff. And I'm hearing a lot of stories that are making me, frankly, a little sad on the text line of kids not wanting anything and being a little bit hostile towards the taking of anything. Roger, I don't know if this is tongue-in-cheek, texted in. I have a crawl space full of memories. My kids say they don't want any of it. They say they don't plan to go through it. Well, I told them a copy of my will was in one of the boxes, which is a good way to make people to go through it, although probably not the best way and place to put a will, Millie. I always want to know that. If I have a will or a trust, where am I putting it? Should I be letting my kids know exactly where it is? How does that work?
So back in the day, the attorney would keep the will in something called a will vault. But but we're not living in Mayberry anymore. We're not going down to Joe the attorney and his son Jeff, and, you know. So most attorneys don't keep the originals. They give them back to the clients. And then the client is charged with keeping it someplace safe. Sometimes clients will say, hey, what about a safe deposit box? And, you know, one of the saddest things I had in my career was a lady whose husband died during COVID. He had been in a facility, and she was kept from seeing him. Mm. And then we needed the will in order to transfer an asset to her name. They didn't have a really good plan in place. And she came to me and said, I need my husband's will. It's in his safe deposit box at the bank. Bank lobbies were closed. The courts were closed. We had a wait and see going on, trying to figure out when we were going to get to that will and how we were going to get in there. So I tend to tell people, listen, keep it in your home, in a fireproof box. It doesn't even need to be locked. If someone steals your will, well, they're not going to be able to sell it on the black market. Used wills are not going for much. No one really wants it other than your family. So make sure they can find it. And in this day and age, we don't put Social Security numbers in wills. We don't put account numbers in there. It's a more streamlined document, and so there's little fear that it needs to be under, like, the security of a bank vault, right?
The original is the most important thing, though, right? We just had a caller last week talking about original versus a non-original, and is there only one original, or do you sign multiple originals, and you can give one to the eldest or the executor of the estate, or is it one, and that person needs to know where it is?
Yeah, you do need the actual original. There is a process through the probate system where you can seek to have a copy admitted to as if it were the original. Those are a lot of hoops to jump through. I've seen it work. I've seen it not work. The original is of vital importance. And a little side note on that, John, you have 30 days after a date of death to make sure that original is filed with the court. The failure to file is a potential Class 3 felony.
Whoa. Wow.
Not kidding. It's not prosecuted. There's no will police running around asking, did you file? But it's the kind of thing you want to make sure is done. The state has an interest in that document. So safe and careful handling of the document and making sure that people know where it's kept, how to get to it, and, who's in charge.
What do you mean by, like, process it with the court? If something were to happen and a listener's parents were to pass away unexpectedly, or one of them was, and they had the will and they knew where it was but didn't know what to do with it, what do you just take it to the local courthouse and say, I've got a will? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, sort of. So the county has a right to the will, and so you go to the no-fee filing desk at the courthouse, and you hand it over. Well, that kind of makes me nervous, right? And, I don't want to say mean things, but I've seen wills misfiled before by county clerks. They're busy. They're putting it with a stack of documents. So when we do that, when we give, for example, Cook County the will, we ask for a certified copy back, and we make sure the certified copy has all the pages that the original had, and it's stamped by the clerk as an exact duplicate of what was received. So if the county loses the document, which I've actually seen happen, they eventually found it. It was misfiled. But then at least you have a way to track it down. You know where and when it was filed. And you have the proof of the filing.
So you walk to the county clerk's office? That's where you go?
Yeah.
Or drive.
You know, John, I'll be honest here. I go to my paralegal's desk and I hand her the will and say, can you go file this?
Okay. All right. I appreciate the honesty. Yes. You've earned that, Millie.
I filed them before, earlier in my career, but we'll make sure that that is appropriately filed. So if the client doesn't have an attorney they work with, they should go to the clerk's office and ask, where do you file a will?
Makes sense. We're chatting with Millie Palmer, by the way, of Navigant Law. We've been chatting a lot about wills. I don't want to leave trusts behind, because a trust kind of sets you up in a whole different world for how things are distributed, avoiding the probate court process. They're a little more expensive. Well, they may be a lot more expensive than a will on the front end of things, but can probably save the estate and your kids a lot of money on the back end of things, right?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, I think that, you know, they're worth their weight in gold almost. And obviously, we don't charge that gold price for it. But when you look at the value of having a trust, a will to me is like a Polaroid picture. It's a snapshot of a moment in time. What do I have? Who do I give it to? If you're saying in a will, give it to my daughter, but hold for her benefit until she's age X, now I've created a testamentary trust. In other words, in my last will and testament, I put in a provision. The place I effectuate that is probate court. The person who sees to how that gets done and oversees it is the judge. The people who make sure that it happens are the attorneys. That's the most expensive way humanly possible, I think, to do a trust. So, you know, a living trust is a document you create that's in effect during your lifetime and after your death. That's that living portion. And you can fund it during your lifetime. I could put my condo in trust name if I had a condo, but theoretically, right? And I could say, hey, if I'm alive, I can use the condo. And if I become incapacitated, here's who's in charge of the condo. And, you know, here's who's got, if you rent it out, here's who's, I get the benefit of it. And after my death, here's who gets the condo or the benefit of it for whatever term of years or time frame I want. So a trust is more fluid on who gets what when and who's in charge.
And my understanding is also, here's the backup plan if this person predeceases me or they're incapacitated. Here's the backup plan. Here's the third plan, right? Like, I think that...
Exactly. You know, in the news recently was the death of Gene Hackman and his wife. And, you know, let's just assume his estate plan said, I leave everything to my wife if she survives me by 30 days. So clearly she didn't, right? But for a while, we didn't know who survived who. What if she had that same provision, if he survives me by 30 days? And we're trying to figure out who died first, who died second, how many days apart did they die? Everything's in limbo. Well, a trust can have a solution as soon as you figure out the math on the who died first. A trust can have a solution about, okay, they didn't survive me by this amount of time. I guess we're going to go here with the asset or there with the asset. You know, we can have backups to our backup.
So the Polaroid, the will in that situation, only spells out one moment or one idea, one thing at a time. And if it's hard to figure out what that is or the solution kind of points at each other, that Polaroid then goes in the garbage and you then are going through an insane process of lawyers and everyone else to try and figure out who gets what. Versus a trust, you could say, well, if A happens, then B. If B happens, then A. If C happens, then, you know, D or whatever the case may be. And it's a little bit more fluid and living.
And a little more fluid. For example, John, if your parents left assets to you and you died shortly after them, and they said to your kids, per Stirface, well, your little guy's a little guy. He can't own anything. So who would manage your share of their estate for his benefit, right? I mean, how that you can put that, you can put all that detail into the trust. You can figure out what you want to do and who's going to be in charge of it.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. Got a great text about who pays for what as the executor of estate. You can call us right now, 312-981-7200. We'll answer that question with Millie Palmer of Navigant Law. Her phone number, 847-253-8800, 8800, 847-253-8800. That's how you reach Navigant Law. But call us right now with your questions. It's Millie Palmer, and we're starting to get some questions on the text and phone line. Millie, you ready to take them?
You betcha, John.
630, if you're the executor of the trust and the parent passes away, who pays for everything, the executor or the estate? I assume they mean like the all the filings or anything that has to be done to get it all done.
So just a quickie, we got a couple terms being used interchangeably here.
Okay.
The caller asked if you're the executor of the trust. I think they mean if you're the trustee of the trust. You're the executor of the estate, the trustee of the trust. Sometimes the same person. Just to make sure we're talking apples to apples, I'm going to assume the person in charge of the estate is the same person as the person in charge of the trust.
I don't quite know what you mean by those two different things.
Gosh. Okay. If I die owning assets in my name individually, I have a car, and I own the car just in my name, and I die, the car becomes part of my estate. If I have a bank account and I own it through my trust, my bank account is part of my trust.
Mm-hmm.
So the person in charge of my estate, which is controlled by my will, is my executor.
Ah.
The person in charge of my trust assets is my trustee.
So executors are used more with a will. Trustees are used with a trust.
Yes,
okay,
and it's
cool.
A lot of times it's the same person,
okay.
Right? It's all okay. I just, you know,
no, it's good to know that. No, I like to. I'm glad you clarified.
Okay, so the question was, who pays for the work? Well, the cost of administration, the cost of settling, doing the things, that should be borne by the estate or trust. But a lot of times, there's no cash available. If I die tomorrow and the only asset I own is a condo, I have no money in the bank, nothing that can be sold to raise cash, and the condo real estate taxes are up, who's going to pay for that?
Hmm.
Well, I'm going to need to either sell the condo quick, use my own money, or have a beneficiary pony up some cash to float the estate. I mean, you have to ask who's going to pay for it. But ultimately, when the condo sells, the assets of the estate and trust should reimburse anyone who went out of pocket. Those assets should be used to cover the cost.
So you can pay for it out of pocket and assume that you're going to get reimbursed from the estate once you sell that condo or sell some of the non-liquid assets. But you may be out on the front end for something.
You could be. So better is if the person who dies leaves some liquid assets. I mean, if we're trying to plan for things to go smoothly, leaving some liquid assets is a huge help. Additionally, if I don't have liquid assets or there are no liquid assets, let's document who's lending what, and let's make sure everyone is aware of that. So there's no question later. This person's going to get paid back, and we're going to pay some interest on it.
Makes sense. Hey, let's take a call here from Mike. Mike, you're on WGN. What is your question for Millie? Hey.
Hey, Mike.
Mike, hello.
Hi. Yeah, the reason I was calling is that I understood that wills and trusts are separate legal documents,
mm-hmm.
and therefore one doesn't supersede the other.
Well,
go ahead, Millie.
Yeah, that's a good question. They are separate legal documents, and they apply to different things. The will applies to your estate, and the trust applies to your trust assets. Usually, if you have both, go ahead.
Yeah, the thing about it, what I was going to say is, in the trust, for instance, my dad, he had listed that his two sons were to split things 50-50. But he changed his will about 2 years before he passed away, and he said, this one son gets two-thirds, the other one gets a third.
Whoa.
In the will. Therefore, the trust doesn't get, unless the trust got changed, the only thing that affected the change was actually the will, which is basically whatever was in the checking account.
Interesting. Go ahead, Millie. Talk through it.
I think, well, while I can't give you specific legal advice without reading the documents and sort of seeing the ins and outs of the circumstance, I think you're right. My gut feeling on that is that, you know, typically the will only applies to estate assets and things like the checking account. The trust controls anything that's owned by the trust or transfers through the trust. So if I leave the trust as a beneficiary on a life insurance policy or a Benny on my 401k or something along those lines.
So if you write a will that says, you know, actually I wrote that trust, but I'm going to change it from half a half to two thirds, one thirds, the will doesn't say, doesn't override what the trust is. It simply applies to the things that are just in the will. I guess, can you clear this up in like 45 seconds? Are you saying we should have both a will and a trust, or does the will just say everything that isn't in the trust, put it in the trust? Like, how does that work?
For sure. I mean, the will has a variety of functions. The first function is to transfer our estate assets to our trust. So that's a pour over provision. I can also do some specific gifting through a will. My car to Joe, everything else to my trust. But once we get past the who gets what when, the will tells us who's entitled to act as executor through probate. It can tell us what we want done with our person, burial, cremation. It authorizes an executor to do things like file our final tax returns, settle our estate debts and expenses. It has a variety of functions. Was that under 45 seconds?
It was just about. If you have any other things to top off or to pour over, you can pour it over into the 2 o'clock hour, Millie, because we're keeping you around. Boy, you really know what you're talking about, and we got some great questions coming in about inheritance letters, other things. We're going to get to it in the next hour. If you want to call Millie directly on Monday or next week, 847-253-8800, 847-253-8800. But we got our still on this show, 312-981-7200 till 3 o'clock. 312-981-7200. This is complicated stuff. Okay, I'm going to do quick two texts, and then Sandy, you're next on the phone lines. 847 wants to know, are you stuck with the attorney that drew up the trust, or can you switch attorneys if you want to make changes? That's from the 847.
Sure. Typically, people will go back to the drafting attorney for modifications, but if your experience wasn't, if you didn't like them or you want to go someplace else or try somebody new, you certainly don't have to stay with the drafting attorney. You can go to someone else. There's no rule or requirement.
Or maybe they retire, too. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I see that a lot. A lot of drafting attorneys, it's so complex to draft these days that a lot of attorneys are like, oh, I don't know if I can stick around. They're getting ready for retirement. They think, I think I better, you know, let this be my last one.
But you wouldn't mind if someone called you and said, hey, I had a trust with this other person. I'd like you to help me get it up to date.
No, I'd be honored to help.
847-2- let me give you the number one more second. 847-253-8800 or 8800. What were you going to say, Millie? Sorry to cut you off.
Well, I mean, you know, you always want to respect the drafting attorney, at least I do. I don't like to, you know, whatever. But we really love it when we have an opportunity to help somebody out.
Yeah, Millie, you're not someone to try and steal clients. I know that. You're
I'm the nicest person.
Yes, trust me. I'm just saying for second opinions or, like we said, if an attorney retires and you want to take it to someone else.
Not everyone's cup of tea either.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe someone used an attorney on when they lived in the Country Club Hills area, and now they're up in Schaumburg, and they want someone closer to home, or they're looking for someone maybe who makes it more of a primary part of their practice. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people switch attorneys.
Right. Actually, let's get to Sandy. Sandy's been on hold long enough. All right, Sandy, sorry about that. How are you doing today?
Just fine.
What's your thoughts for Millie?
Well, you know, in the last week, my husband has gotten two letters, one phone call, saying that he may be entitled to an inheritance. Mm-hmm. his cousin passed away last October. He was never married, never any kids. So we're thinking, we know it's related to him somehow. And mm-hmm. we're thinking, you know, did he not have a will? Or? But now these letters, they're asking, well, if we get this for you, it's 15% or it's 25%. Or we don't know what
Sandy,
to do.
Sandy, that's, I would be very, very concerned that someone's trying to scam you.
Okay.
I would be very concerned. So I send out letters to beneficiaries that don't expect an inheritance. I'll do those letters that say, please contact the office. You're a beneficiary of an estate. Under mm-hmm. Illinois law, there's a notice that must go out if the beneficiary is through a trust. There's a formal notice procedure. And there's formal notice requirements of an estate through probate. So those are official documents that must go out. I never, never back charge the beneficiary. The estate pays for our services. So if I would never ask the beneficiary for money.
Okay.
I that's a big red flag for me.
Do you, Sandy, you don't have to say any names, but does it say which estate it's from? Was there, like, company letterhead? Is there?
Yeah, it is his cousin. Well, yeah, one place is in Schaumburg, and one, I think, might be in Florida, and I don't know where the phone call came from.
Yeah, this seems
but
really...
But I know the person did die.
Yeah. Millie, is there a way that a scammer could get information and try and reach out to either fake beneficiaries or real ones and try and get ahead of it with some sort of pay now
sure.
scam?
Sure. I think that, the problem is that scammers are pretty clever. If they would use their powers for good, not evil, the world would be a much better place. But, Sandy, I think you should take that information to an attorney, have them look at it.
Okay.
And then if it's part of an estate, if it is the cousin who died and your husband is an heir under the law, then there mm-hmm. should be an attorney that's dealing with the estate or a family member who's dealing with the estate that he can reach out to and contact.
Okay.
So not just a third-party stranger, right?
Okay. Do you do items like that? You know, I did snoop around, like, on the county website. And I did find that they have some hearings set up, like in May, or so I think it's legit. But then these middle hunters or whoever they are.
The letter that you received, and maybe I jumped to the wrong conclusion. If there's a hearing coming up in May, then it could be that that's a hearing for the appointment of an independent administrator, because the cousin had no will, and it's a probate court notice. With that in mind, the family may have filed an affidavit of heirship, which has to list who the known heirs at law are, and that might be why you're getting some contacts from outside parties.
Right.
Who see him on an affidavit of heirship and now are saying, we can help you get your money for a percentage. The fact is he should get his money without paying a percentage.
Sandy,
I
didn't mean to interrupt, guys. I think that we'll get down to the bottom of this, Sandy, if maybe you reach out to Millie or another lawyer. I don't want to go through too many details on the air, but...
So at my office, that's mostly Dora Motes, another attorney that does probate work. But the two of us go to court, and she goes more than I do these days. I'm getting a little long in tooth.
But Sandy, you can call Navigant Law. You guys are fine. Hold on, I'm going to put Sandy on hold just because we're all talking over each other, which is no fault of the callers. The number for Millie and the office at Navigant Law is 847-253-8800. That's a great question and a great call. And even if it does turn out to be true, Millie, I don't think it's bad for everyone to have their scam tentacles or ears always up.
I think so, John. You know, you got to be careful in this day and age.
All right, we have a great question from Gene. Kind of a, I don't want to say it's a basic one, but I think it's one that we need to make some sense of. Gene, what's your question?
Hello. I keep seeing references to the trust must be funded. I have no idea what that means. We have a trust. We thought everything was buttoned up and set, and I do not understand that term.
That's a great question, Gene. And everything might be buttoned up, and it may just be someone used a different term. But Millie, why don't you kind of walk through that?
Oh, I think that's a common misconception, is that once you signed the fancy pieces of paper, it's buttoned up and ready to go. And the fact is that when you create a trust, or when we as attorneys help clients create trust, the next step is to transfer assets to the trust or make the trust the beneficiary of the assets. And I can put it in English. Think about it as like if I Pepsi Corporation. Pepsi Corporation is a large company. What does it own? Well, it could own buildings, it could own facilities, it could own recipes for the secret sauce. How does it own things? We took those things and we got them connected to Pepsi, right? So a trust is similar. It's an entity that can own things or have things paid to them. So when I create a trust for clients, we'll spend a good portion of time talking about how do you fund it? How do you change your beneficiary to be the trust? Which assets should have a trust as beneficiary? Which shouldn't, right? That's that process that people refer to as funding. And funding is connecting your assets to the trust.
Millie, I've got a way to maybe say it and tell me if this is wrong, and then I'll make sure that Gene understands what we were saying. The paperwork to make the trust is like building the box, but you still have to put things into the box.
That's exactly right. And usually when people sign the document in my office, if they own real estate, I'll help with getting the real estate in the box. Because, you know, you want to make sure that's carefully done. We'll do a deed or a format to get the real estate in the box. But we'll ask the client to do their own funding. We offer to help, but it's usually the client that does the funding.
Why? Because you can just fill out paperwork for other things on your own? You don't need a lawyer to fund the trust?
Yeah, it would be lawyer overkill for them to pay me to fund their trust. You know, if I were to change a beneficiary on one of their accounts, I'd have to find the account, get the right paperwork, fill it out, and then have them sign it, right? So I could just tell them about the process, and they could take those steps.
And save themselves some money.
We're helping elderly clients fund. We do the work. It's just, for the most part, clients do it themselves.
Let me go back to Jean. Jean, did that kind of make sense, what she's saying?
Yes, and we've assigned all our assets, the real estate and vehicles and, you know, everything we own is already in the trust.
Great.
We went through lengthy questionnaires before creating the trust.
Wonderful.
Questionnaires from the lawyer.
So you put everything in the box, or you funded it, or whatever term you want to use, but you've done all the great work, and Jean gets a round of applause. She's ready to go. Thanks, Jean, for the phone call, okay?
Well, thank you for defining that, because that term had never come up during the process of working with a lawyer.
Well,
and I thought, oh, my Lord, you know, do we have to pay court costs here or something to get trust administered or whatever? So,
well,
Jean,
if you were wondering, other listeners were too, and you helped answer the question for them. So thank you very much.
Thank
All right,
you.
That's Jean. And Millie, it's always important. Yeah, the verbiage that everyone uses is a little bit different, so it's helpful to get on the same page.
That's right. That's right, John. And, you know, Jean mentioned that they did a worksheet with the lawyer's office. And I just want to point out, most attorneys these days will ask for some information, we do, about assets and family structure prior to the initial consult. Obviously, we don't want to know exact amounts, and we don't want to know account numbers and things like that. But planning for a $50,000 asset is different than a $500,000, is different than a $5 million. And so, you know, kind of getting a scope on what the assets are and what the client wants to do prior to the meeting is a good thing.
All right. 847. John, where is this lawyer's office located at, Millie?
Oh, pardon me?
Where are you? Yeah, where's your office located at? They want to know where you're at, Millie.
Oh, well, that's good fun. We're in Arlington Heights, Illinois, possibly home of the future Bears. my office actually overlooks where the racetrack used to be. So we're on the near the intersection of Euclid and 53 in Arlington Heights, Illinois.
And you can be reached at Navigant Law at 847-422-3738. This is a great question. We get this a lot from the 224. What if every asset has a beneficiary? Maybe I've done a transfer on death for the property, a POD, which I don't know what that is, Millie, but I'm sure you do. Let's say you've done all your 401ks have beneficiaries. Then why do I need a trust? Well, that's a great question.
Well, it is a great question. So a POD is a payable on death. Some places use POD, some use TOD, transfer on death. Some just call it beneficiaries. You know, when I think of using beneficiaries as the sole way of transferring assets, I think of that as the crystal ball method of asset transfer. If I were to look into my crystal ball and gaze into the future and figure out who's going to be alive at my death and who's going to be able to handle assets at my death and not incapacitated, I could just choose those people as my beneficiaries and call it a day. So there are some assets that we like individuals on as beneficiaries, but, you know, we always want backups to everything. If this person is not capacitated, if this person fails to survive me, if they
aren't married to me anymore.
Aren't married to me anymore. Oh, my gosh, John, that's true. That's true. You know, we want a backup for all of our, if you're going to use beneficiary provisions, you got to go pretty deep on who the beneficiaries are. And a trust is easier to do that. I can put in all the if statements. I could just type all day long, if not this person, then that person. If they're incapacitated or under age 18 or, you know, pick your own if statements. I can put in a then do this statement. I never am going to be able to fit all of that on a beneficiary line on a form that I get to fill in at the bank or the financial company.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. I'm kind of curious. Let's say you have your beneficiaries lined up and you've put them on like your 401k and a couple other places. And let's say there's a conflict with what your trust says. What wins in that scenario?
Okay. Do you remember like fourth or fifth grade math when we learned like order operations?
Yes.
We do what's in the parentheses
exponents.
Oh my gosh, you're good.
Multiplication, you're division, good. Addition, variables. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, I remember half of it, and Iridian helped me with the rest, but go on.
That's the same type of thing we do in my area. First, we look at does the asset have a joint owner who's now living? Survivorship to a joint owner is a by operational law. My joint owner just takes the asset. So if my sister Kate and I buy a condo together and I die, Kate just gets the condo. The second way we look at is pay on death beneficiaries. If it's just me, I own the condo on my own. Did I do a transfer on death or TODI, a transfer on death instrument naming a beneficiary? If I did, the beneficiary just takes. If I don't have a surviving joint owner and I don't have a beneficiary, then it's part of my estate, and we ask, did I leave a will? If I did, the will tells us where it goes. If not, Illinois has a statute that tells us who gets what when. And then the opposite of all of that, if I don't want to do one of those things, I can put all of my ideas in a document called a trust, make the trust the owner of the asset or the pay-on-death beneficiary, and have the trust control who gets what when.
So you go to the order of operations, which you laid out, and then if there's a trust, that it goes to the top.
It goes to the top. It's the top of the list.
That's a good way to put that.
The trust didn't die. It still owns the asset. It's an alternative form of ownership. I don't own it. I own it through my trust.
That's a great explanation, Millie. We still got another half hour, and the calls are coming in right now. The text, too, 312-981-7200. We are getting to the bottom of all of this estate. We are breaking it down with Millie Palmer of Navigant Law, who you can reach at 847-253-8800, 847-253-8800. If you're just joining us, Millie Palmer, Navigant Law, estate planning. She's out of Arlington Heights. She helps out so many people. Just a down-to-earth, salt-of-the-earth good person, Millie Palmer is.
Oh, John, that's awfully nice of you.
Well, it's true.
I appreciate that.
I mean, I love all of our guests, so it's like choosing between kids. I'm not going to do that, Millie, but I really like you. 847-253-8800 is her number. 312-981-7200 is ours. I'm going to get to two callers here, and just callers, if you call in, this is general chatter, not specific advice, so let's kind of give broad strokes here, and then you can always follow up with Millie on another day. So let's start with Joan. Hello, Joan. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing great. What's your question for Millie?
Well, I have a daughter who's challenged, and I set up a special needs trust within my trust back in 2008. And I was wondering if I needed to go back and look at that, if there have been changes in what can be put in a special needs trust, how much, or if there's anything I should be looking at that have changed in all that time.
Oh, what a great question from Joan. Millie, what do you think?
Well, Joan, first of all, you know, you did a great thing putting together that special needs trust, or it sounds like it's a sub-trust of yours, meaning assets that'll go to her will go with special needs provisions. And that's really a great thing, trying to protect her and help her in any way you can. I think that, you know, when I think about how often you should look at documents, you might as well take a peek at it every 3 to 5 years. But for you, in your case, it's mission critical that it's correct, right? I mean, you got to make sure it's just right for her. Here in Illinois, we had a whole new trust code come in on January 1, 2020. So chances are your document wasn't updated for that complete change in law. So I would strongly urge you to get it looked at, update it, bring it up to the post-January 1, 2020 law, and make sure you're keeping abreast with what changes there are in beneficiary law and how you want things done for her.
Right? And just because the law changed doesn't mean what she did is all null and void, right, Millie?
No, gosh, it's not like a gallon of milk. It didn't go bad because you left it on the counter. I'm sure it's still valid. Well, I'm not sure. I didn't read the trust. I guess I can't say things like that. But it doesn't mean it's not valid anymore. It just means that it's written under a statute that is no longer in existence. Mm. And there's possible problems with that.
Joan? Oh, go ahead, Millie. Sorry, keep going.
Well, that's a while ago. That's almost 20 years ago. I bet things have changed for you and your daughter, too.
Yeah. Let me get Joan back here on the line. Any follow-up, Joan?
No, I just was wondering if she had any idea, or she probably couldn't out of her head tell me any of the changes. So, yes, I will do that. I will have it look over.
Good.
And forget, congratulations on the baby.
Oh, Joan, thank you so much. That's really appreciated. Thank you so much. And Millie, is there any like broad strokes you could give of what the changes were? Or is it just too specific and in the weeds? It's not.
There's new notice requirements. There's new terminology on how we talk about things. There's this concept of a designated representative, someone who's going to be your daughter's voice inside the trust. There's things like that didn't exist before that we want to make sure we're looking at. Additionally, you know, maybe you want your daughter to have an ABLE account set up for her, and you want the trust to have the ability to fund the ABLE account annually. So that's a way to leave money to pay for rent
you know, transfer it to an ABLE account, and then it can pay for her rent or cost of living in a way that's different than if you do it just through the straight-up special needs trust.
Okay.
So there might be things that she didn't think about before or that have changed how they happen.
That's great. I'm glad that you helped out Joan, and Joan will do that, I'm sure. And she's on it, so she's going to fix it.
Give us a call, Joan. We'd be happy to help.
Yeah, Joan, the phone number is 847-253-8800. And Katie, you've got something for Millie. Good afternoon, Katie.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Of course.
Hi, Katie.
So, how are you? So my father used to give my brother and I copies of the will, and I know he had a trust. And then he got with a girl, and then he got Alzheimer's. And anyway, I didn't have a copy of the will or the trust in the last 10, 15 years. After he died, I went and got the filed will with the county, and it said that my brother and I were taken out of the will, which is something that he'd probably never do. Anyway, he did have Alzheimer's. I haven't figured out the timing on it, but from what I learned from you, if he had a trust, how do I get a copy of the trust?
Meaning, like, do you think the trust might over supersede some of the things that was changed in the will towards the end?
Yeah, well, isn't that what you just said?
Well,
is a trust.
Yeah, let me. I know that, Millie, you can't talk specifically about Katie, and I know you'd take her call on a more personal time. But Millie, just generally speaking, what a tragic situation.
I mean, it's really rough, right? You might have a right to a copy of the trust. Remember, there's some notice rules that are under the new Illinois Trust Code that might say that you're entitled to a copy. And so then who do you ask for it? Well, the girlfriend or the attorney that drafted the will or did the filing of the will may have a copy of that and may be required to give you a copy upon request. It's hard to know. You know, you might be a beneficiary still under the trust, but I have to say when people reach out and ask me to update a last will and testament, we typically update the trust at the same time. So it's possible you are disinherited in both places. I guess, Katie, one of the things I wonder about is, was your dad under some undue influence? Was your dad of his own free will doing these things? We're not trust litigation attorneys. We typically send that to people who do litigation services. But, you know, it's an interesting question, and it's something that you should kind of think about.
Millie, would you be willing to at least chat through with Katie on another time and to maybe recommend some people to talk to?
Of course I would, yeah.
Yeah, because Katie, that sounds heartbreaking in so many ways. I can hear it in your voice, even if time has passed. Call Millie maybe next week if you get some time, and you can chat through things a little bit more specifically than we can go on air. Does that sound okay?
It does. I got the 847, but
I'll give you the rest. How about that?
Yeah, I was more worried about your phone number to make sure I had the right call-in number.
No. And, you know, your situation's not uncommon, unfortunately. 847-253-8800. I'm going to say that again, and if you still missed it, Katie, don't worry. I'm going to say it a few more times before 3 o'clock.
Thank you.
847-253-8800. Katie, take care, okay?
All right. Thank you.
That's Katie who had a sad call there, but that happens sometimes, Millie, and she mentioned the Alzheimer's. I mean, I know that maybe not something you handle, but that is something that there are lawyers out there that try and make that work.
Absolutely, and I actually know some really good people that work in that area that when there's a situation like that and it needs litigation, we'll send them to. If we can come to settlement, we'll help the family through the settlement process, but if it needs litigation, that's a special skill set. And, you know, you really need a litigation attorney to help you with that, and one who knows trust law.
Right. 847 wants to know, I have a will and trust, but I don't think my two kids want to handle it. Can I have shared trustees? That would be if it was a trust. Or do I appoint my lawyer to handle it? Ooh, that's an interesting question, Millie.
Ooh. You know, some attorneys will do that. I think it's a conflict of interest. I've never taken that role, other than maybe for a family member like my sister or somebody that where I might be a natural choice as well. But some attorneys will do that. Better still is maybe using a trust company. There's some really good ones out there. They get up on Monday morning and they go to their computer and switch it on and they start working on your stuff. Unlike your kids, they're not doing it evenings, weekends, after soccer games.
Wait, there are trust companies that can be the trustee of the estate?
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of them out there. And, you know, it's not necessarily an expense that that won't pay for itself. In other words, they know what they're doing. They're going to keep it. They're going to make their way through it faster. They're going to make it, they're insured if something goes wrong. So I love when I can have a trust company involved.
Interesting.
Not everyone needs one, right? It's a client decision. But if they don't want their kids or their kids don't get along or they don't have the time, you can use a private bank and trust to be your trust company.
Okay. Millie Palmer, I got a couple more text questions coming in. The phone lines are open, 312-981-7200, for maybe one last question or two. You can also call Millie and her office, Navigant Law, 847-253-8800. The question I'm going to ask Millie, and this will be a tease and we'll get the answer after the break, is a common one I hear a lot. Along with myself, says the 847, there are two siblings listed as executors in my parents' trust, and what we think that they mean there is trustees of the trust. I know that we went over that verbiage earlier in the show. An aunt recently passed. My cousin states that in Illinois, we're not all equally trustees, but the first person is listed. If the first person can't perform the duties, then the second and so forth. We're under the impression that we're equally responsible. Millie will kind of tackle that. It could be a specific answer to a specific one or a general one. Millie Palmer has been our guest today and doing a great job breaking it all down. She's from Navigant Law, who you can reach at 847-253-8800. Millie, before the break, I walked you through a question from the 847 that I'm going to rephrase here a little bit. But basically, this person says that they have two siblings with them listed as trustees on the parents' trust. An aunt recently passed away, and the cousin states that in Illinois, we're not all equally trustees, but the first person listed. Meaning that I think the cousin is just using some insight from a separate trust to say, hey, this isn't how it's done. I guess my question in the 847's question, Millie, is, can you make in your trust three kids equal parts as trustees of the estate? Can you list one, two, and three? Is it just how it's written in the trust? Exactly.
Yeah.
That determines it, or is there a state law that rules over this?
No, there's no specific law that I'm aware of that says it can only be one person as a trustee or executor. A lot of times, clients will want their kids to act together as co-trustees. So Joe, Mary, and Sarah as co-trustees, right? All three together. Whether or not that's a good idea is a separate question. Sometimes it's Joe, otherwise Mary, otherwise Sarah. So it's in the order listed. And so the first person up who's ready, willing, and able to act is the person in charge. So you really have to look at the document. You have to look at what it exactly says to see, are they all three together in charge, or is it just one person at a time? First up is this person, then that person, et cetera.
So basically, this person who has their two siblings listed as co-trustees on the parents' trust, that could be entirely valid. And the cousin who says, no, we are ranked one, two, three, if not one, then two, both of these trusts can be entirely valid just following their own different set of rules and guidelines.
That's exactly right, John. And just a little side note, you know, co-trustees, unless the kids march in step and are 100% in agreement on not just what to do, but how to do it, that can become a tricky little pickle there.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds like the cousin's a little bit of a know-it-all. That's just my own personal side. Like, no, the law states.
I
no,
did not say that.
You didn't. I did. That was a John aside. Well, it just sounds like, no, that's not how our trust is. Yours must. No, that can't be. I know cousins like that. Love them all. All right, Millie. A lot more questions on the text line, but we did tease this, so I just want to say we got about 2 minutes left. 23andMe selling data off. We've talked about it on WGN. I never even thought that it would have any part of estate planning. Do you have any worries or concerns about the 23andMe thing, having relatives show up that want a piece of the action for estates?
It's such a concern for me. If I die and I leave my assets to my brother, per Stirface, or to his heirs, or to his children in equal share if he fails to survive me. And let's say he dies, and he's been on 23andMe, and he had a kid out of wedlock he didn't even know about. And that kid comes forward and says, I'm a relative, and I'm his child by DNA testing. What kind of situation am I in?
A mess.
I'm in a mess. So you got to be careful in your documents to say to my brother, otherwise his kid's person name and person name, right? But then what if he has, what if I want it to go to him or his kids and he's going to have four or five more? Do I have to update my documents every time? It's a mess. It's a drafting mess. And, you know, I'm not even sure what the real result on that is. Mm. Additionally, if I have my DNA up there on 23andMe and I die, is that an asset of my estate? Does my executor have to go get that asset? What do they have to do with it? Should they shut it down? You know, you get into really some questions on what's out there and what's looming out there.
Is part of this, we won't know the answers to those questions until court rulings have to deal with it, which they undoubtedly will have to in the future?
I think so, John. And I think that you can do a little bit drafting-wise, and you can say only known beneficiaries or people that are acknowledged children, or you can limit it that way. But, you know, again, or, you know, legally adopted or born within his marriage or born...
Right. You can come up with a language with a lawyer to make it all sound a little bit more without leaving it just so open and nebulous.
Open to that 23andMe dilemma.
All right. Millie, by the way, the texter who had the cousin, they just said, thank you so much, Millie. I just heard that very helpful answer on the air. And John, you were right about the cousin. So there you go. I knew it.
Well, I hope the cousin didn't hear, John. I'm sure they're perfectly lovely.
That's why we're not using names here. That's why we're not using names. The only name we used today was Millie Palmers from Navigant Law. You can reach her at 847-253-8800. Millie, thank you for your extra time today. 2 whole hours on this stuff. We'll talk again soon in a couple weeks.
All right, John. Always have fun with you.
That's great. Millie's wonderful. Give her a call, 847-253-8800. Her and her team, they'll chat through everything with you. They're good people.